building, you know that, so.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and call to order a subcommittee of the Senate Committee of Judiciary. The purpose for the subcommittee is so we can take public testimony. We will not be able to take any action on bills while we're in the subcommittee. I have two members that are supposed to be here at some point, but since we're here and you are here and you want us to talk, we're here. So Representative Olson, we know you have a busy day. Please come forward, and we're opening up a public hearing on House Bill 2403A, and is Rob here too?
Yes, if Mr. Bovet would
Come
forth.
Yeah, Rob, please come forward.
That damn hippie.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you, and committee member. Thank you. My name's Andy Olson. I'm state representative out of the Albany area. And this is, you know, Mr. Chair, this is a continuation of where we were at with the intensive work that we did, four or five years ago with, you know, the DA from Lincoln County, Mr. Bovet, on what we did with originally Senate Bill 570. And there's been just kind of a little journey along the way. We had one of the most, aggressive and extensive bills that we passed, back in 09, the deal with metal theft that was happening. And I think we were very successful at what we did with that. And we've just, kind of come back every other year, it seems like, to do a little bit of simple tweaks to the bill to get it right. And that's exactly what 2403 is about. And it's just kind of three simple little things that addresses business friendliness for the recycling business. And I'll go through them really quickly with you. The first thing it does, it provides metal recyclers a way to mail payment to a post office box. Two, it allows a metal recycler to release payment directly to an individual if their check was undelivered after 10 days. And understand that's optional. And then the third piece that it does is simplifies process for issuing payment to a commercial seller or nonprofit. I can go into detail with you if you like on those points, but I think you're going to get those from what it is, and it just simplifies what the law is. So
myself and the chair member understand this, and the member of the committee. Oh, now we have two committee members.
Well, the other one's
and he's a fast learner too. So
the other one's talking.
Yeah.
No, Mr. Chair, we were both here when we did it. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
And I actually had a preview of this when the bill was on the House side too.
Right. He told me that Mike DA was going to be here. I would have been here on time, but yeah.
Well, just kidding. That was a special invitation.
Oh, that's right. That's why you got me here. Okay.
So, Representative, anything else?
That's it. I mean, it's. Okay. I think we pretty much have a handle on it. I know Mr. Bovet is going to share a little bit from his perspective too.
Okay, Rob.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rob Bovet, District Attorney, Lincoln County. I'll keep it very brief. As you're all aware. In the mid-2000s, we had a true scrap metal epidemic. Utilities were getting ripped off. Farmers were getting ripped off. We were having bridges taken apart, sold for scrap metal. And as you probably also know, approximately 78% of property crimes committed in Oregon are committed by addicts dealing to pay for their addiction. So it was all tied in with the meth epidemic. So we enacted, you enacted, Senate Bill 570, which the representative and I worked heavily on with all the interested parties. And it was based on a model we stole from a few other states, and then we improved upon it. And it has been phenomenally successful. We knocked it out of the park to the point where if we even make a minor tweak to Senate Bill 570, everybody comes out of the woodwork to make sure we're not going to tamper with our success. However, we do need to make a few more minor modifications because we did impose a lot of burdens on the scrap metal industry, and we need to be mindful of the fact that we need to also help them do business well. One of the things I find ironic that we need to fix is the fact that I forgot to craft in there a method to pay people that don't have a mailing address that is not a physical address. And I happen to be one of those people. So right now I can't lawfully sell scrap metal to anyone in Oregon under the legislation that I crafted because I only have a P.O. box. So if you have a P.O. box listed on your driver's license with the physical address as well, this bill allows essentially me to now sell scrap metal. So that's just one of the minor tweaks we really do need to fix to really tune-up Senate Bill 570. I think we're running to the end of the tune-ups because it is working quite successful. And I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
All right, thank you. Any questions? All right, gentlemen, thank you very much. And I'm going to go ahead and officially open up the Senate Committee on Judiciary since we now have a quorum. And is there anyone else who wanted to give testimony today on the bill that's before us, which is House Bill 2403A? Not seeing anyone, will close the public hearing, open up a work session on 2403A. And Senator Cruz.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2403A to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2403A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would suggest you are such a major player that you should carry this one as well, I would
All
think.
Right. Any other comments?
Unless you really don't want to. Then I'm sure either one of us would be glad to if you don't take the honor appropriately.
That's true, but the chair was deeply involved.
Yes, he was.
When we did that, so.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Is there any objection to the motion?
No.
Not seeing any. And by popular demand, the chair will carry House Bill 2403A. Close the work session on 2403A, and I believe that's going to take us to... I just want to see. Let me just do this. Wade?
Pat Wade.
Pat Wade. Pat, how long is it going to take you to go through what you need to do?
3.5 minutes.
We're going to go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2569A, so you won't have to sit here through the next one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2569A adds law practice to the list of entities eligible for appointment as a trustee of a trustee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Patrick Wade. I'm a lawyer in private practice in Eugene. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon State Bar, particularly the debtor-creditor section of that bar, which is proposing this legislation. This legislation would fix a minor problem that exists with regard to the appointment of a lawyer in Oregon as trustee under a trust deed. The particular problems that we face are that sometimes a particular lawyer who's a trustee might be unavailable, out of town, perhaps in the hospital or on vacation, which leaves things sort of in the stasis without the ability of some other person to act in the official capacity of a trustee. This bill would permit basically a law firm or a law entity to be appointed to be a trustee under a trust deed, and contains a definition of a law practice and the circumstances under which a lawyer in that law practice may sign an official document in the capacity as a trustee. Be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? So basically, Patrick, what this is going to do is allow for the firm to be able to conduct the business and not one particular attorney within the firm.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
All right. Anyone else who wants to give testimony today on House Bill 2569A? Not seeing, we'll close the public hearing, open a work session on 2569A.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2569A to the Senate floor to do pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2569A to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Can I ask one question?
You may.
Because it just popped into my mind.
Sure.
If the law firm, a member, leaves, and they were originally the trustee, the person had the relationship with the person, to break that bond of that to the new place, is that going to be a real problem with this bill, or is that just something that will have to be negotiated with the firm and the individual lawyer who may be leaving?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senator Roblin, I don't think that's really a significant issue. What we're envisioning here is that at the inception of the engagement, the law firm would be appointed as a trustee, and then a particular lawyer within the firm would act on the matter, and if that particular lawyer moves to a different firm or retires or whatever, the firm would still be the trustee.
Okay, I'm fine.
Yeah, just want to give you a clarification. Any other questions? Any objection? So ordered. And gentlemen, do either of you want to carry this?
I'm fine.
Senator Roblin will be.
He asked the question. He should carry on.
Yeah, fully informed now. Senator Roblin will be to carry on 2569A. Patrick, thank you very much. We'll go ahead and close the work session on 2569A. and we're going to go ahead and open up our last hearing for the day, 2783A. Anna?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2783A creates offense of unlawful tethering as a Class B violation if a person tethers a domestic animal in a person's custody or control with a tether that is not a reasonable length, with a collar that pinches or chokes, tethers more than 10 hours in a 24-hour period, or more than 15 hours in a 24-hour period if a tether is attached to a running line, provides exceptions, defines adequate bedding and shelter, and adds tether as that results in a serious injury as a first-degree animal neglect as Class A misdemeanor, and tethering that results in a physical injury as a second-degree animal neglect punishable as a Class B misdemeanor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. And we have Representative Witt that's going to kick off the presentation today. So, Brad, excuse me, Representative Witt, why don't you go ahead and come on up. And I have a script here. I would ask other people to come with you, but the script says you're by yourself, so you're on your own.
Wow. Ask all the hard questions right here.
This is
okay.
The one that gets
we'll see not tethered to anyone else, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, we'll see who goes for the lifeline is what I was going to
exactly.
say.
Good morning, committee. Mr. Chairman, State Representative Brad Witt, Oregon's House District 31, appearing before you this morning in favor of House Bill 2783A. As your administrator just pointed out, the bill establishes limits on tethering and sets minimum standards for the shelter of domestic animals or dogs. I would point out that whenever the animal is in the presence of a person such that the dog would be under the control or custody of that person, the time restrictions do not apply. The bill also prohibits tethering that would entangle the animal and risk injury to the dog. Or the use of a collar while tethered that pinches or could potentially choke the dog when pulled. There are a series of exemptions under the bill. For instance, to comply with recreational area rules or campground rules, those sorts of things, when engaging in licensed activities such as hunting, while transporting the animal, keeping animals for that are kept for the purposes of herding or protecting livestock, or used in dog sledding. And lastly, if the animal would be tethered to protect it from agricultural activities. The minimum bedding and shelter provisions of the bill require that bedding be of sufficient quality and quantity to enable the dog to remain dry, reasonably clean, and to be able to maintain its normal body temperature. And lastly, that shelter be of sufficient quality to protect the animal from the elements and to protect it from the possibility of physical injury as well. This is bill establishes, I think, very reasonable minimum criteria for the humane treatment of animals, our best friends who can't be here to testify in their own behalf. And I would urge the committee's favorable action on the bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Questions for Senator Cruz?
Thank you. And Representative Witt, you may not be the one to answer this, but hopefully somebody in the room will. I'm supportive of the bill. My concern, quite honestly, is in Section 3, and it gets to the definition of domestic animal. I mean, for example, if birds are included in that, you know, a shelter with a wire or chain link four is absolutely appropriate for birds, okay? But if birds are not included in the definition, then we're fine. That's just something I need to have on the record.
So. Well understood. And Mr. Chairman, Senator Cruz, my understanding
there will be better people better positioned, I think, to answer that than myself. But my understanding is that by definition, this is focused on dogs. And as I say, there'll be others better positioned to answer that more fully.
But I just thought I'd throw it out there for
absolutely.
Everybody.
Absolutely, and I understand your concerns as well.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
I have just one.
Senator Roblin.
And thank you, and great to have you here, Brett.
Thank you.
The issue for me is that in that first section, it has to do with, or second section, reasonable length. Do we have any definitions? Is that going to be in rules?
Yes. That, Mr. Chairman, Senator Roblin, that is, as you have seen, not defined, and the reasonableness proportion to the size of the animal, and as you go through the bill, it also talks about making sure that they're not there's not entanglement, right, that there's not physical danger to the animal, those sorts of things. So the reasonable, not, but the situation is defined, laid out in the bill.
My only concern about that is that, you know, you may have a person that people don't particularly like and doesn't have a great relationship with his neighbors and others, and they tether a dog, and all of a sudden they figure out that the only way to get him is that it's not reasonable. And reasonable is in the eye of the beholder a lot of times, and that makes me a little concerned if I don't have some kind of a definition about what reasonable is, to the extent that, you know, I understand the tethering, and you have the tree right next to it, so he runs around the tree and he chokes themselves, because I've seen that happen with people. So it has to be an open space and all this kind of stuff. But it just makes me nervous, and I mention that to you because I don't think if you can help it, you shouldn't tether dogs ever. And I have, fortunately, in all my dogs, I haven't had to do that often. But it still makes me a little uncomfortable. So I'll listen to it unless you have anything. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? Representative, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, appreciate it.
All right. So I'll go on script here with Scott Beckstead, Jim Doerr, and Randy Kobe. And while y'all are getting scheduled, I want to just put on the record, we had looked at this prior to starting this morning regarding domestic animals. There is a definition found in ORS 167.310. Domestic animal means an animal other than livestock or equines that is owned or possessed by a person. So I'm assuming that is the definition that we will be referring back to, since it's in the code already, and there's no specific different definition that's in the bill. So if that's not correct, then I'd need someone to put that on the record.
So by that definition, certain birds would be exempt because they are livestock. Other birds would not be exempt because they would be parrots and other kinds of good pirate paraphernalia.
That was my concern. That,
being a pirate person.
I mate.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. Who's going to lead off in this panel? Scott?
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director for the Humane Society of the United States. Chair Przonski, members of the committee, happy to be here on behalf of the Humane Society of the U.S. in strong support of House Bill 2783. I live with my family in Sutherland. We are dog owners. I'm a constituent of Senator Przonski. The bill before you is the result of a comprehensive process that involved a work group that involved my organization, as well as the Oregon Humane Society, Oregon Veterinary Medical Association, Oregon Animal Control Council, Multnomah County Animal Services, Albany Police Department, Washington County Animal Services, and Fences for Fido, and Banfield Pet Hospitals. The process involved four hearing sessions before Representative Witt's House Ag and Natural Resources Committee, probably one of the most thoughtful and comprehensive processes that it's ever been my pleasure to work with in terms of the amount of discussion and consideration that went into crafting the bill before you. It was voted out with a do-pass recommendation by an 8-1 margin, passed the House floor by a 45-14 margin on the House floor. What does the bill do? Let's first get to the issue of domestic animal. There were early concerns on the House side about whether this would include livestock or horses. Would this, for example, impair the right to tether a goat to eat around the trees, or a horse, tying up a horse in the process of normal equine activities? No, the domestic animal is defined by existing statute to exclude equines or livestock. On the issue of will it affect some, the bill conceivably, now that the issue has been raised, it could involve birds that are not defined as livestock. And so to the extent that that's a concern, then that might be something that we might want to address. The bill exempts dogs engaged in hunting, dogs engaged in protecting or herding livestock, and dogs used in dog sledding. Significantly, the major agricultural interests in Oregon were neutral on the bill. The Oregon Farm Bureau, the Oregon Cattlemen, the Oregon Dairy Farmers all remain neutral on the bill. The bill creates a Class B violation of unlawful tethering if any of the circumstances A through D listed under Section 2(1), any one of those individually would constitute the offense of unlawful tethering. If the unlawful tethering results in physical injury, it becomes a Class B misdemeanor. If the unlawful tethering results in serious injury or death, it becomes a Class A misdemeanor. So the bill basically is here to address the problem of the chronically chained dog, which is, of course, 80% of the dog-related complaints that are addressed by law enforcement are involve these chronically chained dogs, and you're going to be hearing from members of the work group who will testify to the benefits of the bill. And with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
All right, thank you. Who's going to go next?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Randall B. Covey, Washington County Animal Services. I'm here today to testify in strong support of House Bill 2783A. I'm representing Washington County Animal Services and also the Oregon Animal Control Council. Oregon Animal Control Council's membership is made up of animal services officers and animal welfare professionals across the state of Oregon. To my right is Officer Jim Doerr, Albany Police Department. We've agreed in the interest of time and out of respect for your time, Officer Doerr will provide support. Correct me if I make any misstatements, but ultimately I'll be speaking for both of us and out of respect for your time again. I've been an animal welfare officer for 27 years. I've worked for over 5 years in the Lane County area. I had the privilege of being a special agent leading the law enforcement division of the Oregon Humane Society for almost 10 years. I was commissioned as a special agent by Governor Kitzhaber in his first two terms and by Governor Kulongoski, specifically charged with enforcing the animal welfare laws of the state of Oregon. We have some good laws in the state of Oregon. This bill is intended to improve those laws in a small way, but in a significant way. This bill contains language that will help field officers address many complaints from concerned neighbors, friends, and even relatives of animal owners. Committee Member Roblin, you had a question about the length of the tether. There was some debate in our animal welfare professional field about the length of the tether in determining what was appropriate. The original language set a specific length of about 15 feet. We have the same concerns that you have in terms of neighbors or people focusing on the length and saying, well, it's not 15 feet, you must hold them accountable for that. The reasonableness of the language of the bill allows that determination to be made by the field officers that are investigating concerns and base it on their training and experience related to animal welfare as to whether the length of the tether is appropriate for the size and type of animal that's on the tether. So we feel that that language is a good representation of what will be most useful in field enforcement in being fair in enforcing this law. House Bill 2783 provides clear language. It encourages responsible pet ownership, addresses violations with appropriate penalties, fills a gap in current animal welfare law, and provides appropriate exemptions that recognize common and acceptable behavior or practices. On behalf of both the Oregon Animal Control Council and Washington County Animal Services, and on behalf of Jim Doerr and the City of Albany, we urge you to support House Bill 2783A, and thank you for your serious consideration.
All right, thank you. Question, Senator Cruz first.
Yeah. Scott, would you have major heartburn with taking that one line about the wire floors out? Because I do think there's potential catch-22. I've got a lot of people that have exotic birds, and they are domestic animals, I believe.
You could exempt birds.
Huh?
You could exempt birds. That might be easier.
I'm trying to find the simplest, easiest way, because I don't. This is a minor part of the bill.
Sure.
So.
And you're suggesting again, Senator Cruz, that the
F on line 15, page 2.
Well, I think, yeah, Senator Chair Przanski, Senator Cruz, I think that that language, sub F, wire chain floors, are designed specifically to protect dogs from living on wire floors, which is a problem. What I might suggest, though, is that perhaps we clarify that any bird that is not considered livestock would be exempt from the bill. That might be.
That would work as well.
And of course, subject to what the other members of the
board. No, I understand, but you're here now. So
yes,
I'd ask you, Scott. So I just don't want to have a catch-22 in this thing. So
yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Senator
Roland. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. The first one is on equine. You mentioned that was exempt from here, and I couldn't find it anywhere in the bill. So where was I not seeing it?
Chair Przanski, Senator Roblin, look on page 2 of the A engrossed bill, line 19 and 20. Domestic animal means an animal other than livestock or equines that is owned or possessed by a person.
So this is a different definition than the definition that was read by Senator Przanski.
No, that is the existing definition in the law. The existing law defines domestic animals as.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't include them as equines. I thought you read it. It said equines were domestic animals.
No.
No.
Livestock.
Equines and livestock are excluded from the definition, the existing definition of domestic animal.
Okay. So that takes care of that one. And the. See if I can get back to the other question. Oh, on the reasonableness of the length, I get concerned if do you see if you are arresting somebody that the length of the cord will be the only thing that the charge is based on? Because if it is, and then you're going to get in court, they're going to say, well, how long did it need to be? And then you're going to have to come up with a length, and they're going to say, oh, so it was 3 inches shorter than what you think is reasonable. Somehow we've got, from my perspective, if that's the only charge, is that it was too long, this definition is going to make it very difficult for anybody to do anything with. So your thoughts on that.
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, that's a good question. And I can tell you without reservation that the length of the tether is probably one of the least considerations that we would take as a practical matter in looking into concerns about animals being tethered out. It's one of several considerations. The most serious things that we would look at is the health and condition of the animal, the living conditions of the animal. The length of the tether is one, what we would call a supporting factor or detracting factor, depending on what our determination is. So it's not something which is one of the reasons we changed it from a specific length to being less specific.
For me, the issue would be a tether that does not allow them to get to their shelter, a tether that does not allow them to get to their food, a tether, I mean, so it shouldn't be the link, it should be what it causes them not to get to. So I get worried that an overzealous person would just say, that isn't reasonably long enough for me, even though they could get to fodder, they could get to shelter, they could do those things. That's what makes me the most uncomfortable with that possession. So I just want to make sure that I'm hearing you say it really would be one of those other conditions.
Yeah.
If they were starving the dog and the food was 2 feet farther than his tether would get him, that makes sense, but...
Yeah, and I think you actually, as you point out, as to the tether being, let's say, too short to get to something, I think the reverse could be the same, could be true, is if it's too long in the sense of rowing, right, getting hung up over a fence.
Right.
If it was able to jump or something like that.
Or it needs to be short enough to prevent them from getting to something.
That's
so, I mean, right, to try to put a specific length, I think... would just complicate the heck out of this.
Yeah. So. As long as it's not a sole reason for doing the case.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can tell you that one of the responsibilities of a field enforcement officer is to be able to clearly articulate in court the reasons for taking any action. And I can tell you that Officer Dorr, myself, many of our peers in the animal welfare field are not interested in prosecuting people based on a single incident or based on something that we can't clearly articulate is part of an issue that we feel is a violation.
So my issue would be something like, you know, when taken in consideration with other,
and that's where I want to get to. I think one of the things we are probably going to be doing a little tweaking of the bill as it is now. I think one of the things, and the legislative council who drafted the bill is here, I think one of the things we may want to look at is putting in some type of qualifier,
right,
as to reasonable length, including, you know, the circumstances or other circumstances, something that modifies that
reasonableness.
That's what reasonableness is, because my one concern is that if you go with just reasonableness, if someone wanted to challenge it, if you don't have some parameters there, it could potentially cause some problems. But we do have LC here that could give us some clarification. I'm going to take a moment just to go to the definition of livestock that is in our statutes. It's found at ORS 609.125, and it goes through a litany of various animals that are considered livestock. I will just point out that one of the items or animals that's listed in his domesticated fowl. So when we talked about... So that there may give you a little bit more comfort, you know, as compared to a parrot and that type of stuff.
Follow them. The only other animal, and having raised them at different times, they tend to live a lot of their life with that screen, are rabbits. Now, I've always thought of rabbits as farm animals, so I didn't see them as domestic. However, when I look at this definition, I'm all of a sudden getting a little uptight about...
Yeah, because wire floors in their cages are appropriate as well.
Yep, okay. Exactly. So I don't know if that's an issue here. They were saying that they are not domestic animals. They are livestock.
Chair Przanski, can I speak to that?
Yes, go ahead.
Chair Przanski, members of the committee, I believe that the definition of livestock includes fur-bearing animals, which would include rabbits.
It does.
Okay. Chapter 9. But the way you just read that, it made me a little. No, because yours was just about. Some
I was
birds.
Just talking about fowl because there was a question that came up regarding, you know, different types of birds.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our second panel is going to be Sharon Harmon, Wendy Wimber, I believe, and Mike Oswald.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Sharon Harmon. I'm the director of the Oregon Humane Society. We are a private agency in Portland, Oregon, unaffiliated with any other national or local animal advocacy group. Thank you for your consideration on House Bill 2783. If I could follow up on that question about livestock, there are some other animals that are also not included with that definition that might not be apparent. Certainly domesticated fowl are exempt under the definition of livestock under 609.125. Also ratites, so no one's going to be tethering, or you can tether a emu or an ostrich, and citicines, so parrots are also excluded from application of that. So broadens the definition of bird. We're here today certainly in support of 2783. I can certainly appreciate Senator Roblin's your concerns about reasonable. We have dogs come in 2-pound packages from Chihuahuas to 180-pound Great Pyrenees, and how do we accommodate so that the animals can get away from their own waste, seek shelter, have an appropriate amount of exercise? And I can appreciate the gray area that this provides and wanting some definitions. We're in support for all the right reasons. And dogs are man's best friends. They're social animals. They need to be part of the family. I'm also going to let perhaps the rest of the other panel speak to that. When dogs are tethered, bad things can happen. Not just to the dog. Being tied and tangled is certainly one. Social deprivation can lead to aggression. And when we look at dog bite fatalities, the Oregon Humane Society wants to see dogs valued as family members and wants to see their custodians enable them to be good canine citizens. And when we tether them up and we chain them for 24 hours a day, we often put people at risk, particularly children, that don't know that a dog who's chained has a heightened level of aggression, and that's when fatalities happen. So we'd like to see that dogs don't have the opportunity to be bad. We'd like to see people have the responsibility to be good stewards, and we ask for your support of House Bill 2783. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Hi, good morning. My name is Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Wendy Reimer. I'm a humane investigator with the Oregon Humane Society. When the Investigations Department at the Oregon Humane Society receives a call of neglect of a dog chained out, most times when I arrive, there's no food, no water, and they're standing in their own feces. This happens more times than not. I've had occasions where I've gone out to houses where a dog has hung himself over a fence, whether that chain be too small or be too long. I want to give you an instance of a dog named Angel. She was one of our investigations, and Angel was kept on a 4-foot lead on the side of a house in a mud pit. When she was discovered, she was emaciated. She had wounds in her legs from where the chain was so short. It had rubbed it to the bone, which had pus, you know, things oozing from it. They were severely infected. We did get the dog into our custody. The owners were cited and convicted of animal neglect in the first degree. Thankfully, I can't say it's a happy ending, but Angel is in a great place now. The prosecutor who took on her case is now the proud owner, and she now lives inside. We hope one day that all dogs be able to live inside and live next to you on the couch, but we know that's not realistic. We want them to live in a comfortable environment, having adequate shelter, bedding, potable water, as well as access to food. Continuous cases flow through our department involving tethered dogs. It's not uncommon for us to find dogs that have passed away on chains due to neglect. And it's very very sad for myself to see. I've been doing this for many years. Tethering is dangerous, and long tethers can be tangled around items and objects, so we want to make sure that things are clear so the dogs don't get entangled, choke themselves. In regards to the pinching and choking collars, If a dog were to get caught on something and continue to pull to try to free himself, he can damage his neck, the nerves, the muscles, and cause severe injury. I want to urge you to give us the tool to help these dogs that are on chains. Thank you.
Thank you. Mike.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. Mike Oswalt, Multnomah County Animal Services. Multnomah County Animal Services is the public agency that provides animal services in for the city of Portland and the other cities in Multnomah County, as well as the rural areas. One of the things I'd like to add to the testimony here this morning is that back in the mid-90s, Multnomah County adopted an ordinance, a local ordinance, that was very similar to this. They put into place regulations for tethering dogs. And we've been enforcing that for the last decade and a half and have discovered that by having this type of tool available for local law enforcement folks and animal welfare officers and animal control officers gives them the ability then to investigate cases, take appropriate action if they need to, provide education, impound animals that are in life-threatening situations, and take cases to either prosecution at the state level under animal neglect or under in Multnomah County, at least under the local ordinance, which is it's an infraction. And just to give you some perspective, just last year alone in Multnomah County, we investigated 691 cases of neglect and abuse, and 106 of those were related to tethering and chaining. Having this type of language available to investigators across the state will give them the ability to take that appropriate action that really does lead to animal welfare issues and can make the difference between life and death for animals that are on these chains and in these tethered environments. So any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Great. Thank you. Senator Roblin.
Thank you. So in Multnomah County, with your ordinance,
yes.
How many of those cases were just because of the ordinance, not they didn't use the state already for cruelty or neglect? So Mr. were there any of them that just because of that ruling you could do things that you wouldn't have been otherwise been able to do? And was the penalty enough to cause an issue when it, as a infraction?
Mr. Chair, Senator Roblin, yes, there are cases that are only based upon tethering, okay. And those calls come in from concerned neighbors about the conditions where animals are tethered for long periods of time. But these are individual cases, each one, and when officers go out, it depends upon the circumstances. The discussion earlier about having reasonableness, various elements of an investigation, those are all taken into consideration by the officer being there. Oftentimes, these cases are part of more general neglect or abuse. Perhaps the weather's, you know, it's hot and there's no shade, and or the dog's tethered can't get to water, things of that nature, can't get to a shelter. So there's a number of factors that are involved in the investigation. But having the ability to deal with the tethering gives those officers an opportunity for education for about what's minimum standards and in those circumstances where it might be a manner where it endangers the welfare of the animal, then immediate action could be taken.
Other questions? So I guess the one thing I want to ask for, and this is more making a statement and get confirmation, I'm assuming when an investigation goes on, you're going out there, you're articulating in your reports as to what the conditions are that's surrounding it and the decision that's being made as to how and whether a charge is going to be filed. Mm-hmm. I think that's important to put on the record because, to me, when you're dealing with the term reasonableness, it seems to me that needs to be articulated in there. And I think the type of term, or not, we'll let LC work with us, but maybe reasonableness under the circumstances or something to that effect so it can have a little more guidance for the court and also not leave it
where it seems to be discretionary, and so we're going to look to see whether or not we need to make any of that.
I'm pointing out the conditions that are given the size of the domestic animal and available space that allows domestic animal to become entangled in a manner that risks the health or safety of the domestic animal. So there are some qualifiers to the reasonableness.
Okay.
Maybe not enough, but.
All right. Well, we'll look at it because I've got two members that are concerned, wanting to make certain we've got it. And instead of pushing something out, let's just make sure we got all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed. Thank you all very much. I'm going to go ahead and call up the last of the designated panels, Glenn Cobb, Mark Cushing, and Kelly Peterson.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mark Cushing. I'm here representing Banfield Pet Hospitals. Banfield's headquartered in Portland, actually in Senator Dingfelder's district, one of the largest veterinary practice in the world. 2,700 veterinarians around the country. We see about 140,000 pets a week. We're here for a unique reason. Banfield has provided significant financial support to Fences for Fido. And we like this bill so much because it addresses a problem that's not talked about enough in the animal welfare world and the pet world of tethering, but we like the fact that Oregon uniquely has a foundation that's out helping families and actually saying, if you got a problem and you don't seem to have a solution, we'll provide support. We like that combination. We think this bill and that relationship is a great model for the rest of the country. Our veterinarians are very much behind this, so we think it's a good idea and would hope the state would, the legislature would approve it. Thank you.
Thank you. Glenn, are you going to go next, or is Kelly?
Yeah, I can go. Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, good morning. My name is Glenn Kolb. I'm director with the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association and here in support of House Bill 2783. For a point of clarification, dogs are also a woman's best friend, not just man's. Just want to make that point. Now, we support this bill for many reasons, but I'm going to address just one, and that's the use of pinch or choke collars on dogs that are tethered. This bill stipulates that a tethered dog cannot wear a pinch or choke collar, and we agree with this. And here's why we think this is important. First, a dog that is tethered and then reaches the end of that tether or line often can be jerked back depending on the strike that it reaches the end of the line. And if that action is repeated over and over, as often is the case with tethered dogs, and I think Kelly could address that as she's seen it with dogs that are tethered with our group Fences for Fido, you know, the animal can become injured. The use of choke chains in particular has the potential for resulting in some serious trauma. Veterinarians can see anything from collapsed tracheas, bulging discs, index, and vertebrae problems. Now, I brought with me a choke chain. This often is used along with the prong collar for training techniques on short leashes for obedience training. I think most veterinarians and behaviorists move away from this and believe more positive reinforcement with clicker training or food training rather than this type of corrective measure. But with that kind of training, you've got this, and I'm not asking for any volunteers. You just get a quick pop and release, pop and release. But when you have a dog that's on a tethered line, the release isn't as quick as it should be, say, for a training technique. So the dog can have constant pressure, especially if the tether is short and it's got the constant pressure on the animal and can harm the animal. So second, either collar, the prong or the pinch or the choke chain, can become entangled with the dog's shelter or other debris that might be there, possibly leading to choking or strangulation of a dog. Veterinarians have seen that as well. In addition, with long-term tethering, a choke chain can become embedded in a dog's neck. Often what happens is you get a chain like this on a dog's neck, the dog gets bigger, they don't check the chain, they don't do it for the appropriate size of the chain, and so there's that constant pressure on the dog, and it actually can become embedded in the dog's neck, causing serious abrasion, deep wounds, and or infections. Also third, it really is more appropriate for a tethered dog to wear a well-fitted collar or a body harness. Before coming here, well, both are comfortable and safer for the dog. I looked online, and the harness could be purchased. We think they're affordable, depending on the size of the dog. You're looking at $15 to $40 or $50. So we think any reasonable person who cares about their dog can't afford that. So when we look at House Bill 2783, we don't believe it's onerous, and we don't think it's impractical. What it does, in our estimation, it's a modest upgrade to current animal welfare laws, and it really provides those people out in the field, our law enforcement officers, a bit clearer definitions with which to address the concerns they encounter in our communities across the state. That's why we support this. We encourage your support as well.
Great. Thank you. Kelly?
Chair Przanski and committee members, my name is Kelly Peterson, and most of you know me as working for the Humane Society of the United States. But I am here today representing Fences for Fido. I'm the founder and chair. Actually, no, I'm now the president. And I'm here in support of the bill. So just briefly, I think I've met and explained a little bit about the background of Fences for Fido. But we're an all-volunteer nonprofit. I'm a volunteer. We build fences on Saturdays. We started with the idea of just building one fence a month for dogs and for families who have dogs who live outside on the ends of chains. We quickly realized there was a greater need, and we're building on average 8 to 10 fences a month. We also provide free insulated elevated dog houses, and we also provide for free critical veterinary care, and we spay and neuter most all of our dogs. We started 4 years ago. Since that time, we've unchained more than 600 dogs in Oregon and Southwest Washington. While we're mostly in the Tri-County area, we are also in the Willamette Valley. We've gone as far as Christmas Valley. We built fences. Our volunteers, we are maybe 1,600 strong in 4 years. We have a lot of crew leaders that will go nearly anywhere that a family's in need. We have built in Lebanon, Albany, Gaston, Sweet Home, you name it. We have a wait list of maybe 2 to 3 months. That said, we receive clients one of three ways. One is clients or our families, they apply themselves. They have a lot of humility, and they actually want more for themselves and for their dogs. The other way is neighbors report families, and because oftentimes there are public safety issues resulting with dogs on chains. Also, they have nothing to do on the end of a chain but to bark incessantly. And that causes a lot of problems with neighbors. And as soon as a fence structure goes up, it's amazing. The dynamic shifts in that neighborhood. The third way is that animal control refers these our clients to us, and in large part because they can't do anything about it. This is an opportunity. It's a great education tool. It's for animal control when they are visiting or with the Oregon Humane Society is out, talking to families about other options. I have so much to say, but obviously I'll keep it to 3 minutes. And because I have most of this in my testimony, but what we have found, and also the Center for Disease Control has also, you know, I think, again, this is in testimony, but dogs that are on chains are 2.8 times more likely to bite. If you're talking about a child under the age of 12, it goes up to 5.4%. Having now built fences for more than 600 dogs, our volunteers, seeing what this bill is, it's 10 hours a dog can be chained, still 10 hours in a 24-hour period, or 15 hours in a 24-hour period if it's on a zip line. It's very workable. And I think, you know, at some point, it's irresponsible. If we don't do something, we can't build enough fences to really solve the long-term problem or the overarching problem with chaining dogs for communities. And this is a way we're asking our families to do something more, and also doesn't absolve our responsibility to also be supportive of them and help them with the transition. And so with that, I'll close. I think I have most everything else in there, but I really appreciate this. It's such meaningful legislation. I'm just grateful to the Oregon Legislature for taking this up, so thank you.
Thank you. Questions? I just want to know about the fences. So what type of fences? I mean, are they chain link? Or
they're,
are they
wooden? Well, if we're, they're funny. A lot of them say, can we have a wood fence? And we're like, well, they're free. So
I was going to see if we can get our orders.
It's welded wire.
6 foot tall?
They're mostly 6 foot tall. They're welded wire. We do ground fencing. Sometimes they're chain link and sometimes wood, you know, if there's a homeowner association requirement.
So if you need a fence, just
buy a dog.
Right.
Or go down.
You'd be out there with us.
Save the dog, you know.
There you go.
Call the fence people.
Any other
questions?
That's
good to know.
Thank you very much for coming forward. The last individuals we have listed today, Laurel Rogers and former representative Larry Soa. Larry, come on up, please. And Laurel, if you'll come.
Laurel Rogers.
Larry, thanks for being here. Long time no see.
Oh, I'm on deck first.
You sound like you are.
Good morning, Chairman Prozanski and members of the Judiciary Committee. I am Laurel Rogers, a normal citizen residing at 7621 Southeast Sunnyside Drive in Milwaukee, Oregon, where I live next to just one of those neighbors that you guys have mentioned already today. I appreciate the opportunity to come here and testify against this bill and some arbitrary restrictions that are contained in it that are going to directly impact one of my best friends, Fletcher. Fletcher is a dog that we adopted from a kill shelter after he had spent a number of months there, probably in some danger of being next on the chopping block, as they say, because there's a certain time limit that they spend. He was brought in as a stray, so nobody knew much about him, nor did we, when we decided to bring him home, and I believe saved his life. With that, we came home and discovered that this dog, who had been left unneutered for a number of years, they estimated at least 9 years old, and allowed probably to roam excessively, had some unique challenges, despite the fact that he had a sweet disposition, one of which was that he runs. And given any opportunity, he takes that opportunity and runs fearlessly, including into the sides of cars, to his own peril. We had a fenced side yard planned for his outdoor dog run area for him to be in. Well, lo and behold, he's also a digger, and he was no match for our 6-foot fence at all because he found a way out underneath within moments. So we started looking for a solution. This was a large, active dog intended to be mostly an outdoor dog, though part of our family nonetheless, and discovered that barriers to prevent the digging were going to be excessively expensive. We looked at dog runs, kind of these fenced runs. There's, you know, indoor options in a small house and a large dog. He likes to be outside and have room to exercise. So we were perplexed as to what to do to provide for his safety as well as for his freedom. And that's when we discovered the dog trolley system, which in this legislation is referred to as a zip line. This is a lightweight tether to the dog itself. In his case, it's 20 feet long. Attaches to an aerial cable that, in his case, is 100 feet long. As you'll see, if you have the Exhibit A I provided, it provides an idea of what it's hooked on. He's hooked to this via a full body harness around the chest so he's not in danger of choking. This is so much bigger than any dog run that we could possibly afford. This provides him something like 4,000 square feet of reach and roam and freedom in our backyard. It's certainly bigger than the side yard that we had intended for him, and it is most definitely a lot bigger than our living room. With this system, we are able to engage with our dog without the barrier that a fence would provide if he was inside of a dog kennel style run. I'd like to play for you a video that shows you how easily he moves upon the system, how well my children are able to engage with him. Assuming, of course, I can get it to work. As you can see, using this type of a system, the dog is safe, but he's able to move very freely. The children are able to interact and play with him. If we have a picnic in the backyard, he can curl up beside us. If we go out to garden, he can hang out with us. It's a way for us to really engage, even in a better way than having him in a side yard or a kennel, which would be allowed under this legislation, whereas this would not for certain periods of the day. Also, to clarify, our dog is very quiet. He does not bark except when raccoons and possums are harassing our chickens, which he also watches over. However, since we're not licensed, you know, we're not chicken producers, I don't believe that exempts him from this. He's our guard dog, but he's not an agricultural guard dog in that sense. I particularly want to point out that on summer mornings, you know, the sun comes up so early, he loves to be outside, and he's out there in his doghouse. He comes out, he chases the birds and the squirrels while we're still asleep, and he has freedom to go to the bathroom the minute he wants to. He's not abandoned out there. We play with him in the morning before school. We go out after school. Rain or shine, this is not something where he's just abandoned. And it doesn't mean that in inclement weather that he's out there. He does have a kennel inside the home so he can come in. Honestly, sometimes he flat out refuses, but, you know, we try to bring him in. If it's cold, he doesn't like wind. I don't want rain blowing in his doghouse, things like this. But the reality is it's giving us a chance to engage with our dog who has special challenges. He is safe. He's played with, and best of all, he is safe, which is what we had such a hard time with. Lesser dog owners, could they somehow abuse their animal in this fashion? Of course they could, just like they can by putting them in a crate inside the house all day. And yet nobody sees that, nobody complains about that, and so we don't have this big brouhaha about it because we don't have people calling and complaining. The issue is not the tool. The issue is the abuse. And yet this legislation is making it. So I have to take a dog who has all this freedom and for the legislated 9 hours per day, put him in a much smaller environment that's not, quote unquote, a tether. And to me, that's the abuse for an animal like this. He has full freedom and so much more freedom than this law is actually going to allow him. So my request to the committee today is for you to seriously consider removing the zip line or in a trolley system from this legislation because it already provides for the safety and freedom of the dog. It is not what you guys keep calling a chain, as you can see on the video. The reality is Fletcher waited a long time to find his forever home. And I firmly believe he deserves his freedom in ours.
All right, thank you. Larry?
Thank you. My name is Larry Soa. I'm from Oregon City, Oregon. As Senator Pravetsky mentioned, I served in this body for 12 years in the 80s and 90s. I'm also a practicing veterinarian, and I feel for these dog control and humane society people in trying to get some problems under control. But I'm here because this bill doesn't meet the test. They said they had a committee that looked at rewriting this bill. There was no hunting group. No people that hunted or worked with dogs, or no small farmers that were consulted about the language in this bill. During my first two sessions in the legislature, I represented most of rural Clackamas County. And then after I left the legislature, I went to the county commission. And I had an opportunity over those years to meet a lot of people that lived in the so-called rural areas, but they're not really farm areas, but there's a real problem in Clackamas County, and I'm sure in a lot of other counties, but we live next to Portland, and there's a lot of people in Portland that need money to feed their drug habits, and they come to Clackamas County to burglarize and to steal things, and it's really easy for them to do when people have to go to work during the day. A lot of our people used to tie their dogs out around their farm machinery and their lawnmowers and things like that to ward off these predator-type people. Later on, it became so prevalent that a lot of people installed gates to keep people out, but they climb over the gates. And so dogs are still used to guard the farm, the small woodland area, or whatever. And so this bill, which tries to solve some problems, really inconveniences a lot of people. You heard one here testify today. People go to work, they tie their dog out. If when they come home at night, if they have a school board meeting or something like that, then they're in violation of this law. And also, the bill is deficient in a lot of other areas. it was so deficient that House members from this committee chose to read off a list of dozens of working dogs and hunting dogs, bird dogs and things like that, that should not apply to this bill. And we asked for an amendment to solve some of those problems, but nobody came up with the proper wording. And this bill not only inconveniences people, but it makes it impossible for people in a rural area to own a dog to protect their property. So we would like to have you correct some of the deficiencies in this bill, and we hope that you do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for either Senator Roebling?
Thank you. So is Fletcher on his trolley system 24/7, or is it, do you take him in the house some of the times?
We take him sometimes, not necessarily every 24-hour period. It depends on the weather, what we're doing, and things like that. He is primarily an outdoor dog on the trolley system.
So he could be out there for more than the 15 hours a day that the bill requires.
Yes, and I would prefer him to. I mean, well, if the bill goes through, I can't. That would be illegal, and I'm not going to risk being cited.
15 hours a day would be
right,
the, yeah.
15 hours a day would be the limit.
Right.
My point is it would go from 4,000 square feet. If I brought him into my living room, he suddenly has about 140 square feet of room and kids crawling all over him in a very closed space. And frankly, that concerns me more when it comes to things like dog bites and frustration with a dog that we still don't know as well because he's stray.
Okay.
Other questions or comments? Thank you all both for coming forward. I appreciate your testimony today. Is there anyone else who wants to give testimony on House Bill 2783A? Not seeing anyone coming forward, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2783A. And as the chair stated, we're not planning on moving the bill today. I think there's been some questions that have been raised that I want to allow myself and the committee members to kind of digest and work with council as well as legislative council as to seeing what, if anything, we might want to do to make some modifications if that's appropriate. So with that, I'm going to, Monday we are meeting because we're getting to that point where we have bills that are coming over and we need to just get some stuff before. So we're scheduled to meet on Monday at 9. Senator Dingfelder, 9. All right. We're just making sure. And Senator Dingfelder.
Right now.
All right. Just making sure we get that down in the memo section.
Yeah.
Last time I didn't, give a special invite, I was in trouble, so.
Yeah. Just remember, Ms. Chair, I'm in Colorado Monday, Tuesday.
So. Oh, that's, I apologize. That's right. Do you remember that? Okay. And let's see.
Yes, you may. You are always going.
It's not a skiing trip.
All right. Here's your choice. You can go to Colorado or you get to vote. What do you want to do?
That's a hard one.
So,
I would like to.
Senator Dingfelder would like to have unanimous consent to allow her to vote on the two bills that she did not get a chance to vote on, which would be House Bill 2403A and House Bill 2569A. Is there any objection? So, Senator Dingfelder, how do you vote on House Bill 2403A?
I vote yes.
And how do you vote on House Bill 2569A?
I vote yes as well.
All right, please, that will be noted in the records. And
thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
But she gets one demerit for tardiness. She does get that.
She will be bringing chocolate.
Is what she will be today. Actually, she was the one that's made it easier to let you go for a day.
Yeah,
and I did tell the we did tell the committee staff, so she knew.
And just for the record, Senator Close had other obligations in district this morning. She was excused from this morning's session.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else for the good? If not, we'll see everyone here Monday at 9 a.m. We're adjourned.